Okay, good morning, everyone. Thanks for being patient. So I was asked by the committee to give one of these challenger talks, and I'm going to try and embrace that and deliberately be provocative and hopefully spark some debate later on in the breakout groups. So the claim or the hypothesis I want to challenge is that, and you probably all heard about this, but there's a lot going on in the media. There's been quite a lot of papers coming out that say that with climate change, and in particular with the loss of Arctic sea ice and Arctic amplification, we may get increased frequency or increased severity of cold extremes in mid-latitudes. And I could have brought up as an introduction here any number of newspaper headlines or dramatic photos of like the past winter in the US or papers that are talking about this, but instead I'm just going to put this up. Now, if this guy comes out talking about something, you know it's getting serious and it's entered the public realm. For those of you that don't know him, this is Dr. John Holdren. He is the science advisor to President Obama. So he's a scientist, but he's also a critically important spokesperson for science. Now, in the middle of the cold winter that happened last winter in the US, he came out with this quote in this little YouTube video that you can all go and watch if you like. Just Google Polar Vortex John Holdren. He said, "The kind of extreme cold being experienced by much of the United States as we speak is a pattern that we can expect to see with increasing frequency as global warming continues." Pretty bold statement. And what I want to try and convince you in the next 10, 15 minutes is that I think this is misguided and actually scientifically incorrect. So why, if you're going to attack somebody, why not attack the, t the top and someone that isn't in the room? So I do apologize if part of this talk seems very basic and very simple, but I think we're hearing a lot about complex dynamical mechanisms that may link a change in the Arctic to a change in mid-latitudes. And in some respects, in my opinion, I think we're losing track of some simple, basic understanding that is certain, or certainly more certain than these dynamical arguments. So let's just, at a really simple level, think about this. If we're suggesting there's going to be an increase in cold extremes, that can happen in one of two ways. Assuming that temperatures are normally distributed, which is a pretty solid, or pretty does generally hold. So if you have a normal distribution and you want to get more cold extremes, you can either have a shift in the mean, you can have a cooling. Now I apologize that this figure on the left actually shows a warming, because that's generally what you see in the IPCC report and things, but if you have a cooling, you shift the PDF to the left, you get more cold extremes and fewer warm extremes. So that's one way to do it. Or you can change the variability. So if you increase your variability, you can get an increase of both your cold extremes and your hot extremes. I'm sure everyone is familiar with that, but I just bring it up because I want to talk about these two issues separately. First of all, changes in mean temperature, and then also changes in variance, because both of them could explain or could cause a change in your extremes. So let's start with mean temperature. So what I'm showing here are observed changes, or quasi-observed, they're from reanalysis, but I've done a similar thing for the observations, and the picture looks the same. So two that we've got here for autumn and for winter. These are trends over the last three decades, or slightly more than that, as a function of latitude. And this is land surface temperatures, zonal means. So we can see that over all these latitudes, in both autumn and in winter, we have warming trends for winter. Something interesting things is you do see this characteristic profile of Arctic amplification that we're all familiar with. So greater warming in the higher latitudes than in the mid latitudes, but warming everywhere. So key point one, winters have got warmer. I don't think anyone's going to, over a long enough time period. If you had analysed just maybe the last 10 years, you could see a cooling trend, but I think we're all aware that taking trends over such a short period of time is very dangerous. If you look at 30 years or go back longer than that, winters have generally got warmer. What about going forward into the future? If we look at the CMIP-5 model projections, and I'm showing here at the top a map corresponding to the mean winter temperature change at the end of 21st century, minus a period at the start of the 21st century, averaged from 34 different models, and in this case using the RCP 8.5 scenario, so kind of business as usual high-end scenario. If you look to the other scenario, you'd see a similar pattern, but qualitatively not quite as high in magnitude. But basically, this is obvious stuff. With increased greenhouse gases, you get a warming. This shows in a different way. It's just how the, as a function of time and latitude, how the anomalies, how basically things get warmer, especially up in the high latitudes, but warming across everywhere, but with this Arctic amplification. So winters have got warmer, and winters are projected to get warmer. Quite straightforward. And I mean, I've pulled out a few figures from my recent Nature Climate Change paper, but you can go to the IPCC reports, you can go to hundreds of papers in the literature, they will all show you the same thing, that generally climate change induces warmer winters in the mean. So if we've got warmer mean temperatures, the only other way we could kind of get an increase in cold extremes is through changing the variance, through changing the variability. So let's look at that. So again, we'll start with some observations or reanalysis data, and these are plots in a similar sense, latitude, trend, two different seasons. And we can see that across all these latitude bands, but particularly in the high, mid to high latitudes, we have a decrease in variability. So I should say, well, this is looking at the variance of day-to-day temperature anomalies within autumns and within winters. So variability seems to be going down. And this decline is statistically significant. The latitudes where this hatching is, so in particularly around about 50 to 60 and a bit north, you have this quite a statistically significant decline in the temperature variance. Again, we can say, well, is this a trend that we expect to continue? And the answer, if we trust the models, and I think for this the models are doing a good job because it's basically related to temperature, and the models can handle temperature changes pretty well. The models show for winter a pretty consistent decrease in temperature variance in the winter season. Again, this is comparing end of the century to earlier in the century, multi-model mean. And you can, if you look at the kind of the time versus latitude plot, it really emerging through the middle to, well, this is partly just the way I've taken the mean, but anyway, you see this decline in variance over a latitude band down to like 40 all the way up to 80, where there's not much land north of that, so this is all land surface temperatures. So I missed out saying this, but so winter variance has declined, and winter's variance is projected to decline even more. Now, this is not just a quirk of the CMIP-5 models. This is something that you see in a variety of models, even very simple models. So here I'm showing results from a nice new paper currently in press by Schneider et al. And they've used an aquaplanet, so a much simpler modeling framework to the CMIP-5. But what they did was to run a couple of simulations, one which they call Earth-like, and they say that because it has a mean global temperature comparable to observations. And then they induce some global warming. They have another world which has a warmer mean temperature. So one interesting feature in these results is that even in the absence of sea ice change, and because this is just there's no sea ice in this model, you still get Arctic amplification. So it's just people have shown this before, even in these simple model runs, you get, if you, as a consequence of global warming, if you like, is Arctic amplification. So this here is the potential temperature as a function of latitude, and we can see in this case, and then here, you have a larger north-south temperature gradient in the cool in the present day, shall we say, and in a warmer climate, you have a reduced north-south temperature gradient. just like Jennifer was talking about yesterday. Interesting thing is, if you then look at the temperature variance in this model, you see you have larger temperature variance in this mid-latitude band in the present day than in your warmer climate. So again, with Arctic amplification, with a reduced north-south temperature gradient, you're seeing smaller temperature variance. So this is something that's coming out robustly from simple models, from complex coupled climate models, from the observations we have. And yeah, just to further reaffirm how robust this is, this is just two cases I'm showing here, but they ran a whole bunch more for different scenarios, some that are cooler than present day, some that are even warmer. And you can really see that basically as you go to warmer climates and a weakened north-south temperature gradient, your variance drops away. And the difference, and they did another set of runs where they introduced a mountain just to kind of generate some stationary waves in the system, and that doesn't really change the results. So it's not sensitive to whether you've got a bit of land. Well, it's actually an ocean mountain, but I won't get into that strange concept. But okay, so hopefully I've convinced you, or at least partially convinced you, that this variance is declining and is projected to do so. But you may ask, well, why is that? We often hear this narrative of in a warmer climate, things will be more energy in the system, things will get more variable. Well, that doesn't appear to be the case here. But I'll argue that the actual explanation for this is very straightforward, and probably you're all aware of it, really. For most places in the mid-latitude, well, we all know that the pole is colder than the mid-latitudes, and the mid-latitudes are colder than the tropics. So for most places in the northern hemisphere mid-latitudes, if you get a wind from the north, that brings cold air and generally cold temperature anomalies. If you get a wind from the south, that brings warm air and warm temperature anomalies. And you can see that here in these top two plots, where we've just stratified temperature anomalies according to whether these are a day with northerly winds or a day with southerly winds. And you can see that this kind of intuitive relationship works quite well in most of these regions. The grey shaded regions are just where there's a complex topography. So things get a bit more complicated there. But broadly speaking, cold winds from the north bring cold anomalies, warm winds from the south bring warm anomalies. And if we want to think about extremes, so let's just take a few locations, and these are wind roses for the 5% coldest days in blue and the 5% warmest days in red. And presumably you're all familiar with wind roses, but this shows basically the direction of the wind, where the wind was coming from on these days. So on these extremely cold days, winds are pretty almost from the north. On the warm days, winds are from the south. I told you this was pretty basic stuff. So to take that one little bit further, we can look at how in observations and down here in models, how the trends in these things. So are your warm winds warming more than your cold winds, or are your cold winds warming more than your warm winds? So again, these are kind of trends as a function of latitude. We've got the autumn and winter season. The red line now is your southerly winds, or your days with southerly wind. The blue line is your northerlies. And probably the most interesting thing is to look at the black line, which is the difference between the two. And that you can see that over these, over the mid-latitudes and extending into the high latitudes, your northerly winds are warming faster than your southerly winds. And that makes perfect sense, because with Arctic amplification, the polar regions are warming more than the mid-latitudes, so those cold winds coming from the north are going to be warming more than your warm winds from the south. And this is from the reanalysis, but if you look in the CV5 models, you see a very similar thing. Your northerly winds warm faster than your southerly winds. So you're losing your cold extremes faster than you're gaining warm extremes, which translates to reduced variance, or implies reduced variance. So I must have missed one of these key points, but key point six is this reduced variance is well understood, and it's just simple thermodynamics, temperature advection, effectively. We don't have to invoke anything particularly complicated to explain why variance may reduce, or is reducing and probably will reduce. So if we go back to that original slide of what we need to generate more cold extremes, either a cooling or increased variability, well, in fact, we've seen warming and decreased variability. So in my mind, that could only lead to fewer cold extremes and not more cold extremes. So far I've talked all about the kind of the net effects of either trends in the past or the net effects of increased greenhouse gases, so climate change as a whole. But as Libby pointed out yesterday, it could be that if we're interested in the sea ice specifically, the sea ice could be doing something slightly different to the net effect. So maybe sea ice loss doesn't set the direction of the trend, but it could moderate its magnitude. So now I want to look briefly at some modeling experiments I've done where we take atmospheric models, two different models, this model one, which happens to be the UK model, and model two, which is the NCAR model. And we just change the sea ice we in those models. Representative, we compare conditions representative of the early 21st century and the late 21st century. And this is the change, the response in winter mean temperature in those runs, so future minus present day, if you like. And generally, you see a warming over the high latitudes, which is kind of what you'd expect. When you remove the sea ice, you get local warming, and that spreads out over the continents. If we're interested in the mid-latitudes here, you see warming over eastern, central and eastern North America. You do see a cooling over here, which if I've got time, I want to come back to these two regions as two different regional case studies. But the models agree with each other, pretty much, of these patterns in mean temperature. If we look at what the models show for changes in variance, so again, this is just the only forcing in these runs is removing this or reducing sea ice. We see over the whole of, or pretty much all of the US and large parts of northern Eurasia, this decline in winter temperature variance. There are some regions where it goes up a bit, but quite weak. Generally, the pattern is of a decline in variance just due to the sea ice loss. You may ask, what I've been talking about so far is variance, day-to-day variance. It could be that day-to-day variance goes down, but say your variance of weekly or monthly means or whatever does something different. You could get fewer cold days, but more cold weeks or more cold months or cold winters as a whole. So I wanted to test this, so I repeated the kind of analysis, but using time-filtered data, so either filtering out the high-frequency stuff or bandpass filtering for different periods. And the key point is it doesn't really make much difference. Variability is going down on all time scales. And I don't think that's too surprising given the mechanism I put forward. You'd expect that to act on all time scales. So it doesn't appear to be any shift from short time scale variance to longer time scales or the other way. It's just going down across the board. Okay, so in the last 5 minutes, I just want to briefly talk about two case studies. So this particular one, I'm interested in this area of Central and Eastern North America, and this was motivated by the events of last winter. So this is the temperature anomaly for DJF 13-14, and you can see that there were anomalously cold conditions over this this region, and particularly this kind of cold snap, the strongest or the lowest temperatures were kind of achieved on this date here, 7th of January 14, and here's the spatial pattern of anomalies on that day. So really, over this region, we have very cold conditions. And there was a lot of speculation about whether climate change, and particularly sea ice loss, are going to make conditions like this more likely. So what I did, or what I've done, is to take this box and average temperatures over this box, and then look in a whole bunch of model simulations. Right, so we've got different PDFs here. In each case, the grey bars are, I should have said this, are present day. The blue line is kind of a near-term, it's averaged 2030 to 2049, so kind of near-term projections. And the red is longer-term projections, end of the century. And this is from all of the CMIP-5 models caused by greenhouse gases. This is from the UK model with the same forcing, RCP 8.5, and the NCAR model with greenhouse gas forcing. And then we've got the experiments with where you just change the sea ice. So this is the atmospheric component of that model, and this is the atmospheric component of that model. So really you can diagnose what part of the changes you see here are due to the sea ice loss. And there's a lot on here, but I just want to, I'll summarize it in this plot here, which I'll just blow up. So we were looking particularly at the probability of an event as severe as the one that occurred in last winter in the US, which we calculated to have a probability of 1.1%. So this was all standardized such that in the present day climate, everything had a probability of 1.1. And then you can see what happens in the future in response to either greenhouse gas increases or just sea ice change. And we can see, let's just first of all look at these three here are the climate change scenarios, the RCP 8.5 of increasing greenhouse gases by the CBIT in the mean. By mid-century, you've really dropped down to a very, very low frequency of that kind of event, and by the end of the century, they never occur. And you see quantitatively or qualitatively the same things in these individual models, the Hadley model and the NCAR model. So basically, even by this period here, events as severe or of the temperatures as cold as that were experienced in the US last winter very rarely occur. And then if we look at just the sea ice experiments, we see, again, sea ice reduces the probability of that kind of event by a small, like by a third, a quarter to a third in the mid 21st century, basically down to nothing by the end of the century. So sea ice loss alone is enough to completely do away with those kind of events by the end of the century. So in this case, over North America, both the net effect of greenhouse gas increases and the individual effect of sea ice loss is to reduce the probability of cold extremes. Now the second example, very quickly, is for Central Asia. And this is drawing more on work by a recent paper by Mori et al. Than my own work. And they did similar model experiments where they changed perturbed the sea ice and looked at the response. And one thing they noticed, and I did point out in my model runs earlier, you do find this cooling over Central Asia. Might be hard to see the continental outlines here, but the UK is over here. This blue area is kind of over Mongolia and China. Anyway, you get a small cooling there in the model run where you just change the sea ice. However, if you look at in the CMIP-5 models, what happens, the net effect of greenhouse gases increases, you actually see a warming. So there's a small cooling response when you just look at sea ice loss, but general warming when you consider all the effects of greenhouse gas increases. And actually, if you compare these two, the warming driven by the greenhouse gas increases exceeds the cooling driven by the sea ice loss. So in this case, what's happening is that cold extremes, and this is, these, just look at the bars here. This is, well, this is actually cold winters now I'm talking about, but cold winters become less frequent, and that's basically due to greenhouse gas increases. But there's a, it's moderated a bit by the sea ice loss. So the point is that sea ice loss is not causing more cold extremes, or you're not going to get more cold extremes, but sea ice loss may slightly slow the loss of cold extremes that you'd otherwise get from greenhouse gases. I hope that's clear. I'll stop there. That's my, just leave those up. That's those key points put up there again. And just to reiterate that all of these basically point to fewer cold extremes in the future and not more. So I don't know quite, I don't agree with that original quote from John Holdren. Anyway, thanks very much.